meeting, man. This is cool. This, I get to see all these beautiful faces I haven't seen in a long time since I've moved. And it's always nice to be asked to speak. This is a bigger honor for me to ask to introduce somebody that's so close to me. It's a young man I have the privilege of sponsoring. And this is a big deal. When our tonight's speaker got together, it's off a relapse. I don't know if any of y'all in here relapse. I have. I that was the case in here. And tonight's speaker is going to tell you a story. I know the story very well. I'm here to keep him accountable on top of being able to introduce him, too. And I know tonight's speaker did the work with, he questioned everything. We stayed up late going through this book. We argued that time. And we did make a deal with him. If he would take this suggestion and go out into the world and practice the suggestion, he'd come back and talk to me about it. And through that, we discovered that this deal worked 100%. That nothing that we would suggest to come out of that literature that you go out and do, he couldn't come back and say it didn't work, because it does. And I hope that's the message we're going to hear tonight. And it's very, very, it's a very cool deal to introduce a very good friend, your very good friend, Braden Kay. I'm Braden, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Braden!
And first off, I want to thank Bob for having me up here. You know, there was a point in time where I didn't get invited anywhere, and nobody wanted to hang out with me, let alone listen to me speak for an hour. So, I've changed a little bit since that point in time, and it's all because of this book and this work, my sponsor, my network, and God. And I look around this room, filled with dead people that somehow have a life about them. They're happy, joyous, and free, and it's all because of the work that they've done. And I'm going to talk about that tonight. I grew up here in Roswell, and normal childhood and everything, and always felt a little off. You know, my parents were good to me and everything. I always felt a little off, though. And first time I drank, I was 13. And I didn't feel so off. In fact, I felt the opposite. I felt amazing the first time I drank. I knew since that time, since I started drinking, that's what I wanted to do with my life. I loved it. I thrived on it. It gave me a feeling I never felt before. And it later came to haunt me. And I first started drinking when I was 13. I ended up in the hospital 2 years later, 15 for alcohol, 17 for alcohol, 17 again for alcohol, and then once again when I was 20. It's a recurring theme in my life. And I didn't know why all those years. I didn't know why I ended up in the hospital until I came in here and y'all described allergy of the body, the obsession of the mind, what makes me an alcoholic. And, y'all just bear with me. It's the first time I've ever done this. I'm a little nervous. And anyways, I'm going to get to, I'm only going to talk about two times that I drank. Because I don't want to be a drunk log, and I really want to get into God and the step work. And let me tell you a little story about when I was 17. And anyways, I started drinking on a Saturday. By Monday morning, I was in a coma. I didn't know how I got there. I didn't know what happened. I was blackout drunk. I'm a blackout drinker. That's what happened. Flatline twice. I wake up in the hospital. I don't recognize my mother and my father. I don't know how to read. I don't know where I'm at. I'm freaked out. I'm confused, frustrated. The very next day, I get out of the hospital. I drink. One thing that I did remember is that alcohol makes me feel better. It's not the only thing that makes me feel better anymore. Working with other alcoholics, God, the program, being needed, it makes me feel better. I've never been needed my entire life. I look around this room, every single one of you are needed, because there's going to be more people that come along that were like me, that were hopeless. People that are dying. We're going to be needed.
we do this work and we recover and we have the chance to help somebody, help change someone's life. In fact, when I was 17, I wake up from this coma and I don't know where I'm at. I don't know how to read, don't know how to write. I don't know my parents. They thought it was a good idea. They sent me up to a treatment center in Montana. So I get sent off in this outward bound wilderness deal. And I'm like shaking. They throw me in the woods. I'm up in Montana. I don't know where I'm at. And there's like mountains and shit everywhere. And I just left the hospital. And just, I'm freaked out. Don't know anybody. I don't know myself. And they first introduced me to this program. And they gave me a little taste of it. And I wandered around these rooms for 2.5 years. I did a little bit of work. I made some friends. I stayed sober off the fellowship. I did a little bit just to skate by. And I felt better than I did. But it still wasn't quite right. And 2.5 years into it, I relapsed. Because half measures have failed is nothing. I didn't do the deal. I quit sponsoring people. I quit going to meetings. I quit practicing these principles in all my affairs. I got into some bad relationships. I started hanging out with some shady people. I wasn't living the AA way of life. Things are a little different now. I hold myself to a higher standard than I did then, and I have to, or else I'm going to die. Anyways, I relapsed. And I thought this program had failed me. I thought I'd done it all, I'd sponsored, I'd done this, I'd done that. This program had failed me, y'all are full of shit, nothing's gonna work. I'm suicidal, I'm frustrated, I'm confused, I'm scared. One of a good friend of mine, Doug Fry, a lot of y'all know him. I'm also a meth addict and a whole bunch of shit, and I'm banging meth and I'm coming down off of meth, and Doug finds me at my house and he takes me to a meeting, and I never left because I tapped into something greater than myself. It was the first time I've been around anybody where I felt somewhat comfortable. I felt inviting. I felt safe. And God, I'm so fucking nervous. So I find fucking Dougie. And Dougie finds me. He takes me to this meeting. And I'm suicidal. And I just got out of the hospital again. And I'm going through all this shit. My mother's hiding my shotgun from me. I'm on fucking suicide watch. And I'm going crazy. And I don't know where to go. But Doug finds me. He brings me to this meeting. And he introduces me to a whole bunch of these guys that have done the work. Gene, Angus, Danny, Jimmy, Michael. There's all these guys that have done the work and have got sober. And I felt comfortable a little bit. And I got into the work a little bit. And I challenged everything. Like, from first step to 12th step, I challenged everything. Gene made a bet with me, the same bet that Danny made with him. He said, if you do this work, go through all the 12 steps, and you still want to drink, you sponsor people, you still want to drink and drugs, but I'll take you out, all expenses paid. But that night will end it. And I wanted to prove him wrong, because I didn't have any money. I didn't have any money. I wanted to prove him wrong. I wanted to drink again. So I did everything. From the first step, he explained to me, we were powerless and unmanageable, that our lives had become unmanageable. He said that it doesn't mean that I can't drink. It means that I will drink, no matter what. I will drink. I don't care if I'm falling out of windows or waking up in hospital beds. I don't recognize my parents. I'm gonna drink. No matter what, that's what makes me an alcoholic. I got that one down pretty down pat. I got plenty of experiences to show that one. Then we get into step two, and I came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And he's like, dude, it doesn't have to be Christian. It don't gotta be a Buddhist or Hindu or any of that shit. It's just make one up. Make a guy up. He goes, my God loves big titties. So you know what? From then on out, my God loves big titties. My God loves the Georgia Bulldogs. And you know what? My God has the power to relieve me of the obsession to drink. And we went from there, a little skewed and fucked off, but my God has grown since then. Thank the fucking Lord. Anyway, so we get this step two down pat. That's pretty solid work so far. So we get into step three, and I'm down with all these guys. Have any of y'all ever been to the Rock, the men's workshop? I go down to the Rock, and we're at the men's workshop, and I'm doing my third step with all these guys. All these guys, where I felt, when I first walked into that meeting, I felt comfortable. I felt relieved. Just a little bit with those guys. I did my third step with them down there at the Rock. And basically, Gene told me all the third step is just a decision to go on with the rest of the steps. Continue to live this way of life. Wake up, say my prayers, go to a meeting every day, call him every day, call another alcoholic, and don't fucking drink. It was my first 90 days. All he told me was, AA good, drinking bad, because I couldn't handle anything more than that. Anything more than that was just way over my head. That's where we started. We get into the third step, and I was like, you know what? I believe that you got something that I want. I'm going to go ahead, and I'm going to go through with the rest of the steps. I'm going to go ahead, and I'm going to give it a shot. We get into the fourth step, writing all that shit down. And boy, that I wrote everything down that I had left off the first time. And a lot of people felt a lot of relief when they did their fifth step. I did not. I felt a lot of shame, a lot of guilt. I felt like a piece of shit. I don't really feel that way now because I've made some amends back. I did some wrong. And I'm able to help good friends of mine get sober. My whole reason for existing now is to help people get sober and not fucking die. You know, I was told to dress up nice tonight. This attire and everything that I wear this at fucking funeral. The only way I have it is where I get it. I'm tired of seeing my friends die because they don't get into the program, they don't do the work. Thank God y'all didn't have to go to my funeral. Somebody found me enough and loved me enough to tell it like it was. Anyway, I do my fifth step, and we go through my fifth step, and we find those character defects, and there's a lot of them. There's a lot of them. And Gene's like, all right, we're entirely ready to have God remove them. We say a prayer. God, please remove these defects. And I was like, I don't feel any fucking different. At this point, I'm like, this is all bullshit. It's not going to work. I'm going to get that money. I'm going to go get high. Whatever. But I stuck with it. And I started to learn what not to do. Because I'd look at my character defects. I started to learn what not to be like. Quit being so fucking selfish. Quit thinking about myself. Me. I. All my wants, all my desires. Not important. like hop out of myself and I start thinking about y'all for a change. I start to feel a little bit better about myself. Now I pride myself on that. I like the fact that I'm an accountable friend. Tell me to be somewhere, I'll be there. And it's the same way for all my friends, all the people that are close to me. I know that I can call them day or night. I need you, and they'll be there. No, why, what's up, I'm sleeping, blah, blah, blah. They'll be there. Because that's the kind of friends I have, and that's the kind of friend I've become by hanging out in this program and doing these steps. Get into step 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. I was not really willing to make a lot of my amends. I still have a lot of amends to make. But I see what I get when I make amends. I've been downtown and I've held on, given people bread and clothes and hygiene kits down there for amends that I couldn't make. And I feel good when I do service work like that. I feel good when I go up to somebody and I hand them back some money that I stole. Or I make amends with people that have restraining orders on me. You know, I feel good about that shit. I'm a decent human being now. Always was. I was just sick. That's one thing I want to get across to some of the newcomers. You're not a bad person trying to get good. You're just a sick person trying to get well. And that's something that I had to come to terms with. I thought I was a terrible person after doing my fifth step. No, I was just a sick person. No, I'm somewhat well now. I'm not as suicidal as I was. I'm a whole hell of a lot happier than I was. I got a little bit going for me. And you're getting these demands and making these demands, and all of a sudden the light bulb's starting to kick on. I'm not wanting to drink so much anymore. I'm not wanting to drug so much anymore. My thoughts in the morning aren't how I'm going to get it or who I'm going to steal from. Who I'm gonna gank or whatever. It's along the lines of, damn, I need to call that motherfucker back. I forgot to call him back. You know, I wonder if he's doing alright. I wonder if he's struggling. I gotta say my prayers this morning. I gotta make sure I gotta head down to the meeting tonight. Some things are starting to change within me. We talked about that psychic change. Things have started to change a little bit at this point in time. I'm starting to feel a little bit better, a lot bit better. We get into the 10th step. Continue to take personal inventory when we're wrong, probably admit it. I hate this step, especially in pertaining to relationships. I do not like to admit when I'm wrong, but I do it because it makes me feel good, and I am wrong a whole hell of a lot. And I'm definitely gonna run short. And just look up there at that clock, and that's just so fucking slow.
You feel like I'm a war
story. Oh god. Anyways, I'm get to step 11. Thought through prayer and meditation. To improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him. Praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. I did not want to meditate whatsoever. I thought those guys that hold their fingers like this and hum and shit were full of shit and on some kind of drugs. Because I can't sit still like that. But I learned it wasn't about that. Try and quiet my mind for just a second. Just a inkling. And I started to feel a little bit better. I started doing a little bit more prayer. We went through these steps of the Big Book study. And some things have happened through prayer that I didn't think would happen. You know, I came into this program, I was unemployable. I'm in school right now. All the prayer and meditation, God's work, service work. I'm in school right now, I'm interning with Georgia Power. All because I did the work. And, anyway, get on into step 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. The only thing that I love more than going to my meetings and hanging out with my sponsor and my fellowship is helping another guy get sober. Remember, I told y'all when I started this deal, it's nice to be invited somewhere to do something. I was never invited before. I was never needed. Now I'm needed. Some guy thought enough of me to ask me, would I help save his life? Never had that. Never felt that before. Never had that privilege. Never been needed like that. And it feels phenomenal when I get to work with another alcoholic and I start to see some change a little bit. I start to do a couple things and I start to see the light bulb go off in him like it went off in me. And I tell you today, one of my sponsors has died. I do this work now so that I don't have to watch my friends die anymore. So that's very realistic. And it's very painful to watch. Working with newcomers is the highlight of my life. That's what I do this work for. So I fucking hate it when people don't get it. When they're fed false information, ideas, and opinions that aren't in the book, I hate that shit. Because that shit happened to me. I was fed some opinions and some ideas that weren't exactly in this book, and it came and killed me. I'm very lucky to be in here, standing in front of y'all. When I relapsed, it wasn't fucking pretty. You know, a lot of y'all went to the hospital that night. And I'm lucky to be up here. And anyways, talk about some miracles in this program. I told y'all when I woke up from that coma, I couldn't read, I couldn't write. I didn't recognize my mother, my father. They told me I had irreparable damage. And I can be the same. Some people still think I have irreparable damage. The fact of the matter is, I probably do. But, I'm here to tell you, the first book that they had me read was the book Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm glad I did. I got to learn how to read reading this book. And it was not an easy read. I still read with my finger, but you know what? I read a hell of a lot better. You know, I recognize my mother and my father today. In fact, I have great relationships with both of them. I've made some amends there. And they trust me enough to have me live with them in their house right now. And they don't have a deadbolt on the door anymore. Which is, I can't describe to you what a miracle that is, that they don't have to sleep with a deadbolt on their door. You know, they don't call me up at, you know, midnight. Where are you at? What are you doing? Every single night anymore. And I have a little bit of trust there. Because I've done some action. I've proven to them that I've changed. You talk about being unemployable. I told you about all that shit. There's miracles upon miracles upon miracles that have happened in this program. But the biggest miracle of all that I'm happy. For someone that is hopeless and dying and dead on the inside, I've done the work and I've become happy, and I'm able to sit up here and make a fucking ass out of myself watching this goddamn clock. And I can do it, and I'm happy because I'm in a room full of all my friends, and I just, oh shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, a long way to go. And I'm happy. And I haven't taken a drink in over a year. I haven't put anything in my arm in over a year. I haven't put a gun in my mouth in over a year. I haven't been in a hospital in over a year. That's a miracle for a guy like me. For a guy like me, if life were fair, I'd be doing 25 to life or I'd be dead. And that is that. And I look around, there's fucking miracles everywhere. And there's a whole fucking row of them right here. Especially that guy. But, you know, it was an honor and a privilege to be up here to share for 17 fucking minutes.